Thought it'd be a good time to check back in with State Senator John Keenan of Quincy for an update on what's happening with the pandemic at the state level now that we're in, John, phase one of reopening, right? How are you?
Yep, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Thanks for spending some time with us. Second time we'd be able to chat this way. Hopefully next time it'll be in person.
That'd be great. That'd be great. And we already mentioned that we are in phase one and we're making our way through phase one. And the numbers, some days are more encouraging than others. Yesterday we had another 93 deaths and we're had another 635 new reported cases. And so, you know, total deaths now are over 6,600. I think it's at 6,640, which is a lot of death. And but there are some encouraging signs. So let's hope that the trends continue as they are and that the number of cases and the number of deaths continue to decline.
Exactly, yeah. What kind of is your overall opinion of the governor's phase plan?
I think the phase plan makes sense. And I think it will serve to insulate us from resurgence in the short term. There's no guarantees whether it will insulate us from a resurgence come the fall, but I think in the short term, it makes some sense. It is a struggle. There are a lot of people out there who are struggling with work and income, and you know, hopefully they'll hang on. We'll all hang on, and we won't slide back. We'll just continue to move forward from this point.
Right. I mean, I think the unemployment numbers came out earlier this week at the state level. It's approaching a million, I think.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It is absolutely incredible. And again, you look at trends. The trends are showing both statewide and nationally that the number of new claims is starting to slow. That's not to say that the number of people on unemployment is dropping, but just that the number of new claims is starting to slow. And some of those that had filed for repeat claims, some of those are starting to drop off, which is an indication that they may be returning to work. So that is good.
Is the unemployment system solvent, John?
The unemployment system will be as solvent as it has to be.
Okay.
There is no alternative at this stage. You know, we have the traditional unemployment where employers contribute and employees contribute, and then we've expanded it to cover those that haven't contributed, those that are in the contract economy, the gig economy, to make sure that they have access to unemployment benefits. And typically that is something that is not available, and so it's unfunded. And even just the logistics of putting a software program in place for them to apply required a lot of effort. So, but it'll be as solvent as it has to be. The benefits will be there as necessary. The federal government has made that commitment. The state will make it. And we're starting to figure out a little bit about where things are financially, and it's not good. And a lot of it's going to rest, in particular how the state does and how our local governments do, on whether the federal government passes the HEROES Act, which was passed in the House and is now in the Senate awaiting action, and then perhaps it'll make its way to the president's desk.
Yeah, it's, I mean, as you're aware, as we speak, the city of Quincy is going through the budget process right now, and the initial estimates, I think, something were like a loss of $14 million in revenue total, you know, from state aid and also from federal and also from the city side. So, I mean, at the state level, last time we talked, I know you'd been talking about maybe a 112 budget, like a monthly budget. Is that still something that's being discussed?
It is being discussed. In historically, a 112 budget has been when the House and the Senate can't come to terms on a consensus budget. And so you take last year's spending and you continue it forward on a 112 basis. You take 112 of what you spent and you move it forward. We will likely have an interim budget this year. We're really not calling it a 112 because most likely the budgeted amounts will be less than what they would have been had it been a 112. The state for fiscal year 2020, our current fiscal year, which ends June 30th, is at somewhere around $700 million in a deficit. And that's not including the additional deficit as a result of the tax filing deadline being extended. So we did a short-term borrowing, a revenue anticipation note, to cover the loss in income taxes for the balance of this fiscal year. And we'll get that in July and then pay off that note, hopefully the numbers work. So when you remove that from the equation, we're still looking at about a $700 million deficit. Wow. The April numbers were devastating. The mid-May numbers, and we don't like to rely on mid-month numbers, but they are not encouraging. If May is a repeat or worse than April, then that $700 million figure could be worse. And then as we go into fiscal year 2021, starting July 1st, the budget process is the governor presents a budget in January, House does theirs in April, Senate does theirs in May. Difference between House and Senate are resolved, but the foundation of the budget process is a consensus revenue figure. And the House, Senate, and the governor agreed on a consensus revenue figure back in January. Since then, since the governor submitted his budget based on that number, anticipated revenues for fiscal year 2021 are somewhere between $5 and $6 billion less.
Okay.
So it's just, it's an enormous number. It's one of the biggest challenges we've faced in the state's history in terms of finances.
And yeah.
Through 2008, 9, through the 90s, and all the way back to the Depression.
So has there been any discussion about how to make that up in terms of areas to cut?
There really isn't at this stage, because there's still uncertainty about what that number will be.
Yeah.
And the hope is that the federal government will move forward with the HEROES Act. There's about $750 billion contained in that legislation to help state and local governments. And while there's been a lot of federal money put out to the state and to municipalities, there have been many strings attached to it. And it's been generally just for direct COVID-related expenses. The HEROES Act would make money available to help municipalities like Quincy and the state like Massachusetts fill their revenue shortfall holes. And so it's something that would be really helpful. And then, of course, at the federal level, we have to figure out how to pay for all this as well. But the federal government has the ability at least to incur debt, whereas the state government has to have by its constitution a balanced budget every year.
Sure.
We can't print money.
Yeah, that's right. There's only one mint.
You don't have a printing press at the State House.
So has there been, have you seen, you know, disparities within your district, John, when it comes to revenue shortfalls?
No. Well, yes. I guess if you go municipality by municipality, yeah. Yes. Quincy is in pretty good shape financially. They were going into this situation, so they're in a more solid footing as Quincy makes its way through it.
Yeah.
Braintree is moving forward. The mayor there, Mayor Corus, is working with the city council on their budget right now. They were in pretty good financial shape going in, so they think they'll be able to weather it. But it's going to mean cutbacks in both Quincy and Braintree in services. Some of the other towns in my district, Abington, Rockland, and Holbrook, they have smaller budgets. They have less of a tax base to rely on.
Right.
They were basically at their Proposition 2.5 limits in most cases. And so they're really confronted with some particularly difficult choices.
Any discussion at the State House as to when the Senate may reconvene in person on Beacon Hill?
Well, we've done it twice, just yesterday, Thursday, which was what, the 28th? The 28th. We went in and we had options. We could vote from home by notifying the Senate clerk in writing of what our vote would be on a particular matter. We could vote from our offices, which has always been permitted under our rules in the case of an illness, and the rules were changed to allow it in this situation. Or we go into the chamber. So yesterday we had four bills that we acted on, three that we did by roll call, and a couple without roll calls. And they had to do with land takings, which is a constitutionally required in-person a roll call vote.
Okay.
So we have been there. I went in, I wore a mask the entire time. We had a distance. There was only about eight of us in the chamber, very, very distance. Others were in their offices.
Yeah.
So we have been there. When we get back to actually having everybody in the chamber, there's really been no discussion. We're trying to figure out how we can pass a budget in the context of everything that's going on, because ordinarily we have a 3 or 4 day budget process. Mm-hmm. We have several hundred amendments to the budget.
Yep.
Each of them is called and heard, and so many of them are debated on the floor of the Senate. We're trying to figure out how to best get the budget passed while recognizing that we all want to have some input in it.
Yeah, it might be a little bit easier on the Senate side than the House side, just because of the sheer numbers. They're doing it at the local level here in Quincy. At least there's only 9 councilors, so they're able to do it virtually. The challenge logistically will be tough to overcome, I think.
Yeah, I was watching some of the Finance Committee meeting last night. I don't know if it was actually live or whether it was just carried on Q8 TV late, but I think it was live. So it's interesting to see it being done remotely. And they've been participating quite a bit in Braintree with the town council meetings remotely, giving them updates. So it's different. You don't get that same feel. You don't get that interaction. You don't get that ability to in-person talk about an issue and maybe negotiate or compromise on an issue. It's just much more difficult to do it remotely.
Sure. I thought we should talk a little bit today, John, about some of the scams that are popping up with regard to COVID-19. I've seen a couple myself. And I know you've alerted your constituency to things to be looking out for.
Yes. So they're taking different forms. The initial concern was that people would be trying to contact individuals saying, oh, we're from the state. We need your social security number to process your claim. Some of that is occurring. And people should be aware and make sure that anybody that contacts them seeking information, the first thing is to, if you haven't applied for any benefits, then nobody should be calling
right.
you. And if you have, the best advice that can be given is when a person calls, ask their name, their position, ask for a telephone number that you can call back on. And then if you have access to the internet, check that number against state telephone numbers. And be careful, because in some cases we're hearing that a number may be a 617 with the state number after it, whereas the state number may be 877.
Oh.
And so people should be very aware of that. But the other thing that we're seeing more of is that false claims have been filed based on prior hacks, whether it was from a national department store chain or something like that. There's a lot of information that's out there. And it appears that some of that information has been used to file false claims. And it's coming to light when there's a bit of a glitch and somebody gets a letter at their home saying that, oh, your claim has been approved, your claim has been denied, or your appeal is in process.
Yep.
And they look at it and say, well, that's not quite my name, and I didn't file anything. And so if they can contact the Attorney General's office or contact department, or contact my office, then we'll pass the information on.
Okay.
But that's kind of a unique twist. The information's already out there. The claim's already been filed. A person doesn't know it, and the only reason they find out about it is when they get something saying that, hey, there's been an appeal or whatever. So when that happens, it's a sign that somebody has gotten your information previously and is using it now.
Okay, and this is with regards to unemployment claims you're talking about?
Yeah, most of them seem to be unemployment claims.
Okay.
That seems to be where the money is, and
yeah.
So that seems to be where the organized scam groups are going. We
yeah.
haven't seen it so much yet on any of the other programs, the food security programs or anything like that. It's been mostly on the various forms of unemployment.
Okay. And, something else I wanted to call attention to that I received in the mail personally with regards to the federal $1,200 stimulus checks. I don't know if you can be able to see this or not, but this came to me in the mail, supposedly attached
yes.
to a credit card, that my stimulus payment is attached to a credit card. And, it's obviously maybe not a scam, but it's certainly not very ethical the way they're presenting this. It's just a line of credit from a, independent credit company.
Yeah. And so often you get those envelopes, official information, open immediately. And you realize it's not. And I guess it's the same thing. If there's a number on there that you have to call in order to activate the card that requires you to give a PIN or a social security number, just more likely than not, it's not what the federal government's doing. So
yeah,
you know that it's a scam.
It's going to the shredder.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
If only it were true, though. If only if it were real.
Yes, sounds too good to be true, and it definitely is.
That's the old adage.
Yeah,
right.
No question. There's a lot of talk going on at the state level, John, as you're aware, with public education and what that might look like going forward into the future. What are you hearing about that?
There's still a lot of discussion. No definitive plans. They're really wrestling with the issue of should students wear face masks? How many will it be a per pupil limit per classroom? Will the calendar look different? Will there be a combination of remote in classroom learning? So there's so much being discussed, and you know, there's really no definitive answer at this point. The same goes for higher education.
Right.
And some of the things, there was a report that was submitted to the governor's reopening task force yesterday by higher education. And they've got some recommendations, some of them that are very practical and some of them that are going to be very difficult to fill. They're wrestling with how to provide food, for instance, not only in our K through 12, but in our higher education as well. How do you feed students? Is it going to be all prepackaged? Is it going to be given to students, for instance, in K through 12s, and this doesn't necessarily apply to Quincy, but this is some of the discussion, when they arrive at school in the morning?
Yeah.
And so that they will eat in their classrooms and they won't have to go to a cafeteria. And same thing at some of the higher education, will the cafeteria be open or will it be basically all to go and you'll eat in your room or within your cluster of students who are in common classes together?
Right.
So a lot to be learned, and it's not so much concern about the virus being passed the food, it's just the atmosphere in which the food is eating and how close people are.
Yeah, similar questions about the organized athletics and, you know, what that might look like, not even in the fall, but just summer recreation programs right now is still unclear.
Right. Yeah, I know the city has come up with a modified program to allow access to some of the recreational facilities, the tennis golf courts, right, and basketball courts. So, yeah, it's all going to be different for quite some time.
Yeah. Big concern about public transportation and how that might be impacted and what the MBTA might need going forward. Is the state prepared to take that on?
The general manager, Steve Popjack, made a presentation along with the Secretary of Transportation, Stephanie Pollock, and they highlighted the issues and the concerns, but do not yet have a definitive plan. And they're exploring such things as limiting access to the platform, which would in turn limit the number of individuals allowed on a train, for instance, at any given time. They have talked over the last few years about a better way to bring people through a station to a platform and queue up to get on a train rather than have the doors open and there be a mad crush. So that discussion's been ongoing and it's become more urgent now. And so it's how do you get them into the station, onto a platform, and into a train with as little contact as possible, and then have them appropriately distance on the train. And if, you know, we were to open tomorrow and everybody went back to work and we tried to accomplish that, it would be impossible.
Yeah.
But there has, the opening is phased. It'll give the MBTA a chance to react, plan, and then react if there needs to be additional work done on the plan. And then you look at some of the poll numbers that are out there as to people's attitudes about public transportation, and there's still a great hesitancy to utilize it.
Yep.
And so in one way, that might give the MBTA an opportunity to really phase in how they're going to do this. But the opposite side of that is that our roads may get crowded more quickly than what had been anticipated. And I can tell you, I can't remember when it was, it might have been early May, when I had to go to the State House for a formal vote, and I made it in about 15 minutes and made it out in about 15 minutes. I worked at the office all day. I left at about 6 at night, which would have been the rush hour, and I made it home in 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I went in, it was a pretty quick commute in, and on the ride home, I hit the wall of traffic at South Bay.
Really?
And I thought this is changing pretty quickly. So people are gonna be less comfortable on public transportation, return to the roads, and we could see, even if we're not fully open,
yep,
our roads congested again.
Yeah, and it also means, obviously, low ridership means the lower revenue for the T. Will they look to the state to recoup that?
They look into the state and to the federal government as well. There's been some federal funding for transportation.
Yep.
And it's whether it will be enough remains to be seen. But it is going to be, ridership dropped off by about 90% at the peak of the pandemic. And you just can't sustain a public transportation system with that.
Yeah. Do you think it'll slow down or maybe reverse expansion of the T?
They have used this opportunity to speed up work on the Green Line extension.
Yeah.
And they've been using it to do some work in stations as well. I think that was a good move, as provided that the safety of the workers could be ensured. It was an opportunity to do some of those things when ridership was low. In terms of long-term expansion of the system, revenue is going to be a challenge. The House had passed a transportation package that had some revenue items in it. Senate had not gotten to that before the pandemic. It was just as the pandemic hit. We will look at it certainly through a different lens now, and it will be the ability of people to fund through fares, the MBTA, or through general taxes for the debt associated with any new longer term projects.
Yeah, I can't help but wonder if this might put renewed emphasis on expanding ferry service, where that might be seen as a little less contact than on a train or a bus.
It's funny you should mention that.
Yes.
Yesterday we had a meeting. I think yesterday might be Wednesday. All the days get worked together with a group that is quite a group of business. It represents several large businesses in the city of Boston and nationally. And they're focusing on two things. One is climate change, and the other is transportation initiatives. And they like what the Commonwealth has done, or particularly the Senate, in terms of climate change legislation, which the House is now considering, or was considering before the pandemic. And so the conversation turned to transportation and such things as congestion pricing. And I urged them to look at ferries, that you can get them in the water pretty quickly. You can get them operating pretty quickly. You don't have to build a road for them to go on, obviously, and you can do some distancing, and it may be a way to move a lot of people to the city in a safe, distanced way and pretty quickly. And our ferry service is shown to be one of the most reliable services in our public transportation network and one of the least subsidized. Mm. So my hope is that they will take that, and that we will continue to look at that, the state, and say this might be a golden opportunity. From sometimes great challenge, you have great opportunities, and I'm hopeful that this is when we take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I can't help but think too that such a major impact was held on the climate. During the full shutdown, it was quite obvious that this may put a renewed emphasis on renewable energy sources as well.
Yes, let's hope.
I wanted to ask you, John, how your experience in Greece, in the refugee camps in Greece, has informed what's happening here today.
Well, it's really interesting because I keep in contact with individuals over there, and you have 20,000 people living on a hillside with limited access to bathrooms and sanitary drinking water. And at last check, they have escaped this relatively unscathed.
Wow.
The camp that I was in, Moria Refugee Camp, which is considered the worst in the world, is on the island of Lesbos. So it's on an island, which is a good thing because you can kind of contain things, but there were cases on the island. The first case reported on the island several weeks ago was a woman who lived on the island, not at all in the refugee camp, who came back from Israel infected. And there was real concern over what was going to happen should that spread on the island and make its way into the camp, because there's no access to medical care. And so what you learn from that is isolation works.
Mm.
The island is contained. And then within the island, the refugee camp is pretty well contained. And as long as you can keep the infection out, people will do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at that in kind of a way as what's unfortunately the tragedy that's happened here in terms of our long-term care facilities. They are like little islands. And unfortunately, they weren't locked down soon enough, and they didn't have the protective gear that they needed soon enough. And I hate to use the word lockdown because we're talking about people long-term care facilities, but they weren't closed off quickly enough to prevent the disease from coming in.
Right.
And the employees didn't have the access to the personal protective equipment that they needed. And so it's like a little camp. And we've seen the devastation that has occurred there because they weren't closed off. And I know when we look back, one of the true tragedies of this pandemic, not only here in Massachusetts, but across the country, will be that the reaction to protect those that were most vulnerable was slow. And as a result, unnecessary lives were lost. And then because of the numbers associated with that, it had an impact on decisions that affected the economy and ultimately impacted everybody else. So that'll be one of the things we look back on and really regret that we didn't see it soon enough and act quickly enough.
Yeah. Anything else that we should add right now, John?
I want to thank people for continuing to do the right thing and distance and to take all the precautions that everybody talks about. And then just to advise people, if they have any issues at all with anything relative to state government, whether it be unemployment, access to food or housing, they can do a couple things. One, my SenatorJohnKeenan.com website has links to information, to forms, to information. It's in a pretty clear-cut way. There's two tabs, one for the reopening and one for the coronavirus in general. And we cover education, transportation, and then on the coronavirus one in general, we have all the topics laid out. It's pretty easy to follow. And so there's a lot of information there. People have questions, check it. And then they also can call the office at 617-722-1494. And we're happy to help in any way that we can.
Great. Appreciate your time. Good to see you. And
thank you.
We can do it in person soon.
Yes. Be well.
Thanks, John. You too.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.